This is the More Than Right podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lopez. It's been 4 years since financier and convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein died mysteriously in his prison cell at New York City's Metropolitan Correctional Center. Conspiracy theories circulating at the time said Epstein was murdered. The murder, say the theories, shielded the identities of those who were part of Epstein's pedophile ring. At the time, some thought the names might surface during the sex trafficking trial of Epstein's gal pal and pimp, Ghislaine Maxwell. Mysteriously, federal prosecutors never entered those names into evidence, and so, it seemed the fix was in. These criminal proceedings showed the U.S. Justice Department was hell-bent on stopping the names of Epstein's powerful pedophile friends from ever coming to light. However, a recent civil suit filed by Epstein's victims resulted in the release of some names. But as the Associated Press reported, quote, a federal judge on Monday ordered the public disclosure of the identities of 150 people mentioned in court documents related to Epstein. The individuals named will include sex abuse victims and people with only a passing connection to the scandal, as well as Epstein's employees and litigation witnesses. Most of the names were already public, unquote. And so it appears the fix is still in. So who was Jeffrey Epstein that he continues to escape the long reach of the law even in death? When in 2007 Epstein faced criminal charges in Florida for having sex with underage girls, then U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Florida, Alexander Acosta, arranged a very lenient deal. According to the Miami Herald, quote, prosecutors spent a lot of time figuring out a way to settle the case with the least amount of scandal, unquote. The sweetheart deal reached with Epstein was a central issue of contention for the Trump transition team in late 2016. That's when Acosta was being considered for the post of Labor Secretary in the new Trump administration. According to the Daily Beast, Acosta said he was told to back off because, quote, Epstein was above his pay grade, unquote. Acosta told Trump's transition team, quote, I was told Epstein belonged to intelligence and to leave it alone, unquote. That suggests the U.S. Department of Justice used Epstein to play a role in U.S. intelligence operations. Reports claim Epstein placed multiple hidden cameras in rooms throughout the various structures situated on Little St. James Island, better known as Pedophile Island. Further, it suggests he recorded the debauchery that took place there. So, what happened to the recordings Epstein made? According to the Miami Herald, days after Epstein's death, quote, FBI agents accompanied by customs personnel, local police, and New York City officers fanned out in golf carts across Epstein's estate on Little St. James Island. They scooped up evidence just 2 days after Epstein was found dead in his jail cell of an apparent suicide while in federal custody in Manhattan, unquote. So, was Epstein part of a U.S. intelligence operation to capture compromising videos of prominent people in politics and high finance? Vicki Ward of Rolling Stone thinks so. In an article published back in July of 2021, Ward said her underworld contacts confirmed Epstein's association with those operating in the murky world of espionage. Quote, the sources, who range from former arms dealers to former spies, suggest that Epstein, who lacked any sort of moral compass, decided to go one step further and compromise influential people by recording them doing things they wouldn't want made public, unquote. For its part, the Justice Department's Office of Personal Responsibility issued a 350-page report on Epstein, which found, quote, no evidence suggesting that Epstein was such a cooperating witness or intelligence asset, or that anyone, including any of the subjects of the Office of Personal Responsibility's investigation, believed that to be the case, unquote. So is the Justice Department lying? Many think so. Among them, Tucker Carlson. In a recent episode of his show on X, formerly known as Twitter, Carlson interviewed Jeffrey Epstein's brother Mark. Carlson's questions to Mark Epstein connect the dots linking Jeffrey Epstein's 2008 sweetheart deal with the Justice Department to his eventual death in 2019.
Did you have any inkling at all that your brother was involved in anything that might get him killed by a government?
No. You know, his troubles he had with the charges with the girls was from the early 2006 is when he first got into trouble, and he spent time in jail for that.
Well, that's a question that's occurred to me. I mean, he went through all this, whatever you think of it, and then he was charged again for the same things, effectively.
Right. I mean, from what I understand, that was going. He had a non-prosecution agreement right. with the federal government on that when he made his plea deal. So he believed he was safe from further prosecution. And then he flew home from Paris in July, and they arrested him on the same charges. And I believe his defense was going to be, well, hey, you know, I have a non-prosecution agreement with the federal government. And supposedly they say, well, that was like the Southern District or some area. Well, as far as I know, we have one federal government. And if you make a deal with the federal government, it covers the entire country.
Has it occurred that maybe the point of rearresting him on the same charges was to get him into a facility where he could be killed?
I've shied away from speculating about all of this. You know, I try to stick with the facts, but that's a possibility.
In 2020, CBS's 60 Minutes produced a segment on the forensic findings of pathologist Dr. Michael Bodden, who was hired by Epstein's brother Mark to serve as an eyewitness to his brother's autopsy. Dr. Bodden explained why the injuries to Epstein's neck were inconsistent with suicide.
The hyoid bone is a small bone here just above the Adam's apple, which is the thyroid cartilage. And in Jeffrey Epstein's autopsy, there were fractures of the left, the right thyroid cartilage, and the left hyoid bone, all requiring different kinds of pressure and positioning of the noose, of the ligature.
The doctor who performed the autopsy, while Dr. Michael Bodden observed, came to the determination that it was inconclusive and they needed more evidence, more information. And then a couple days later, they changed that and determined that the cause of death was suicide by hanging. We reached out to the New York City Medical Examiner, but they would not speak to us.
Tucker Carlson notes that there are three questions concerning Jeffrey Epstein that have yet to be answered.
Who did Jeffrey Epstein work for? What did Jeffrey Epstein do for a living and on whose behalf? We don't know. The second question is, where did all the money come from? Hundreds of millions of dollars that passed through his hands over many years. And where is it now? We don't know that either. And the third question may be the most pressing of all, which is, what happened to Jeffrey Epstein? On August 10, 2019, he was found dead. Did he kill himself, as the government has claimed ever since? Or was he murdered?
Those are three very interesting questions, and ones the scandal mongers of the mainstream media don't seem all that anxious to answer. Why haven't they bothered to ask former U.S. Attorney Alexander Acosta follow-up questions regarding who it was in the Justice Department that asked him to go easy on Epstein back in 2008? Inquiring minds want to know. Success guru Rita Davenport once said, "Money isn't everything, but it ranks right up there with oxygen." She won't get any arguments from the mouth breathers in Congress. Take Nancy Pelosi, for instance. Her net worth stands at around $150 million. The watchdog website Open Secrets estimates Pelosi's wealth rose by $41 million since 2004. Meanwhile, the New York Post reports Pelosi's wealth grew between $5 and $30 million from 2007, when she first entered Congress, to the year 2020. But a New York Times expose on 97 congressional insider traders exempted Nancy Pelosi from scrutiny because, quote, it did not address trades by the husband of Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who does not sit on legislative committees, unquote. In other words, the Times discounts the possibility of husband and wife stock-picking pillow talk. The Times' insider trading investigation found 47 Democrats and 49 Republican members of the House and Senate used privileged information before placing stock and option trades. Back in 2011, CBS's 60 Minutes recalled how in the days before the financial meltdown in 2008, one ranking committee member of Congress used his privileged information for profit.
In mid-September 2008, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average still above 10,000, Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke were holding closed-door briefings with congressional leaders and privately warning them that a global financial meltdown could occur within a few days. One of those attending was Alabama Representative Spencer Backus, then the ranking Republican member on the House Financial Services Committee, and now its chairman.
These meetings were so sensitive that they would actually confiscate cell phones and BlackBerries going into those meetings. What we know is that those meetings were held one day, and literally the next day, Congressman Backus would engage in buying stock options based on apocalyptic briefings that he had had the day before from the Fed chairman and the Treasury secretary. I mean, talk about a stock tip.
While Congressman Backus was publicly trying to keep the economy from cratering, he was privately betting that it would, buying option funds that would go up in value if the market went down. He would make a variety of trades and profit at a time when most Americans were losing their shirts.
It's estimated Backus, who retired from Congress in 2015, has a net worth between $1 million and $5 million. More recently, Fox News host Jesse Waters did his own segment on congressional insider trading. He notes that 2023 proved a good year for stocks. And so, Waters asked,
so how's your portfolio looking? Bet it's not looking as good as members of Congress, because politicians crushed the market last year. Their performance smoked, and I mean smoked, professional money managers who do this all day for a living. Let's take a look back at 2023's best performing stock pickers in Congress. Coming in at number one, Democrat Congressman Brian Higgins from New York. He was up a whopping 239%. Sitting in at number two, Republican Congressman Mark Green from Tennessee, who was up 122% this year. Democrat Senator Dick Blumenthal, also on the list of lawmakers who destroyed the market this year. He was up 68%. Next is the man who really believes Biden talked to Hunter's business clients about the weather the whole time. Dan Goldman was up 53% this year. And then we have Republican Congressman Dan Crenshaw, who beat the market by 13 points. Overall, Democrats outperformed Republicans by about 13 points. Our lawmakers made over $1 billion in financial transactions this year. A lot of them investing in companies that they had inside information on. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what corruption looks like.
GOP Representative Crenshaw was less than pleased Waters included him among Washington's corrupt insider traders. On Instagram, an angry Crenshaw posted, quote, Waters is a tool, making millions to push conspiracies on TV and bash veterans like me who are barely a fraction of his net worth. Wake up, America. The political entertainment industry is almost always lying to you, unquote. Back in 2022, podcaster John Burke of the All American Savage show asked Crenshaw if he was okay with Congress members engaging in insider trading.
You know, I'm kind of neutral on it. Like, if you want only millionaires and billionaires to run for Congress, then keep making sure that we can't raise our pay, that we can't get a housing stipend, that we have to just spend or pay rent in two different places. Mm-hmm. That's fine. If that's what you want to support, but just keep in mind that no one will run for Congress. Mm-hmm. Because you have no way to better yourself.
Apparently, Crenshaw once believed the very least the public could do for their long-suffering Congress members was allow them to profit off the same insider information that would earn a Wall Street hedge fund manager a $5 million fine and a maximum of 20 years in prison. And you thought Hollywood entertainers were the only ones with inflated egos. Many U.S. presidents have placed their investment portfolios in blind trusts, thus preventing a conflict of interest. But no such provision exists for Congress. Oh, and how did Nancy Pelosi's investments do in 2023? Well, her stock holdings increased in value by 65%, double the S&P 500's 24% gain for that same period. You see, the real wolves of Wall Street are nowhere near Wall Street. That concludes this edition of the More Than Right podcast. If you feel so inclined, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, this is Steve Lopez.